Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to our podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And have you ever had a bout of sleepwalking?
I have never had a bout of sleepwalking. My brother used to when he was very small. My parents had to put a lock on his door so that they could get in an emergency, but that he could not get out and injure himself.
Which is germane to our podcast today.
It totally is.
The sleepwalking defense in criminal trials is not entirely uncommon in modern trials. Medical and legal experts are continuing to study the validity of such claims. And did you know sleepwalking crime is actually on the rise?
It doesn't surprise me. It's one of those things where as people become more aware of sleep disorders and sleepwalking disorders, there's both the getting diagnosed increase and the use as a defense, whether accurate or not, increase.
Yeah, and we also don't know if there is a cultural or social trigger. Some experts in the field have posited that because we live in a sort of a more nervous, anxiety-laden culture, it's actually triggering more people to have sleepwalking disorders and sleep disorders in general. So we don't know the exact root of why those are on the rise. Those three things are all factors. But in 1846, it was completely unheard of to claim sleepwalking as a defense.
No one had used that ever.
Until Albert J. Terrell, who was on trial, and his lawyer, Rufus Choate, who took a really unorthodox approach to defending his client.
Yeah, and for the time, it was so out of left field that it was almost like that it wasn't me. Like,
yeah,
you saw me do it, but that was not me.
But nobody did see him do it, which comes up in the trial. So the crime took place on October 27th of 1845, and Mrs. Mary Ann Bickford's body was found in a seedy boarding house in Beacon Hill in Boston. She was only 21, and her body was found on the bed, partially on the bed, partially on the floor. There are different illustrations you can see online that kind of put her in slightly different places, and there's an account that comes up in the trial where they describe part of her body being on the floor. She was in a nightgown, and she had a wound to the neck that had nearly decapitated her. The bed had been set on fire, as well as two other places in the room, and Bickford's hair and skin were singed and burnt. An earring was missing from one of her ears, which was split open as though it had been pulled out, and there was a straight razor at the foot of the bed, which is a pretty grisly scene.
It is pretty grisly, and a lot, there's a lot going on there. Albert Terrell had been seen with her earlier that evening, and a witness account also described him speaking with a stable keeper to try to get transport away from the city.
Now, to give a little bit of background on these two, because this was not a pairing that was unknown already. That was not her first encounter with Terrell by any means. So they were actually known to be engaged in an affair. Both of them were married. Bickford, who also went by Maria, and some other pseudonyms at different times, had gotten a taste for city life when she was visiting relatives. And she actually left her husband, who was in Maine, to stay in the city permanently. And she had even written him a letter and said, you can come and live in the city, but we'll be husband and wife, but I'm going to need my freedom. Kind of saying, like, I will play the part of wife, but I'm not really married to you in my heart. So at one point, her husband James actually traveled to Boston to look for her, discovered her working in a brothel, and headed back to Maine by himself. And in court proceedings, the prosecution stated at one point that she had actually moved to Boston with a paramour that she had presumably met on that first visit to the city that was obviously not her husband. And then that man deserted her, which is what led her to prostitution.
So Mary had met Albert Terrell while working, and the two of them had started a very intense relationship. People described it as both passionate and volatile. They traveled together as a married couple, even though she was already married, and he also was married and had a wife and a family.
And on September 29th, 1845, which was 1 month before the murder, Terrell had actually been charged with adultery. His trial was delayed for half a year, for 6 months, after friends and relatives, and even his wife actually petitioned the court to delay the proceedings because they wanted to all work together to help Albert reform his ways. And they thought if he could, you know, prove he was a good citizen for 6 months and then go back on the adultery charge, even if he was found guilty of it, they would be a little more lenient because he was clearly trying to mend his ways. And the delay was granted. And then Albert was released after, you know, posting bond, and he went right back to Marianne Bickford.
Yes. So that's sort of the history of them as a couple. When Terrell ran from Boston after the murder happened, he went to hide with relatives in Weymouth. Then he went north to Canada to get passage aboard a ship to go to Liverpool. That voyage had to turn back because of bad weather, and he got on a second ship in New York to go to New Orleans. On December 5th, he was arrested after Louisiana authorities got a tip that he was aboard a vessel in the Gulf.
So at that point, he's in custody, and he was transported back to Boston for the trial. And he hired, Terrell, we should note, was not a poor man. He had some wealth. His family was well-established in the shoe manufacture trade. And he hired Rufus Choate, who was a protege of Daniel Webster, as his defense. And Choate was already a very high-profile figure with both a political and legal career. He had served on the Massachusetts State House of Representatives and the State Senate. He had been a member of the 22nd and 23rd Congress. He was well-respected in legal circles. So it was really like the equivalent of hiring a pretty heavy-hitter lawyer today. Everybody would have known who he was. And Choate conceived of this novel defense for his client, claiming that, in fact, Albert was a somnambulist and that he performed the entire murder in a sleepwalking trance. Now, that wasn't his only defense. He also tried to discredit the possibility that he had even committed the murder, but that was sort of one of the new and novel ways that he defended his client.
Right. The proceedings started on March 24th, 1846, and according to court records, the judges were Judges Wilds, Hubbard, and Dewey. Judge Shaw was also scheduled to be there, but he was out sick. Representing the Commonwealth was Samuel D. Parker, and for Terrell, Rufus Choate, and Annis and A.B. Merrill, Esquire.
Jurors were very quickly selected that morning. If you read the Boston Daily Times account, it seems like they really whipped through, like, voir dire and additional questioning really, really quickly. It took about half an hour, according to that reporter's account of it, to select the entire jury. Which, if you have ever done jury duty, it never takes just half an hour to get everybody settled. So that was pretty expedient. And then Parker's opening arguments included a plea to the jurors to disregard any bias that they might have as a result of hearing rumors about the deceased. Bickford's profession as a woman of the night was not really helping the case, but he openly acknowledged what he called, quote, her depraved character. But he reminded the jurors present that the law protects even the wicked as well as the good when it comes to murder.
Parker also asserted that Terrell, who was the son of a really successful shoe manufacturer, had to get married very young, at the age of 18, because he had probably gotten his girlfriend pregnant. He stated, "The cause of so early a marriage in his minority, I need not state." That's part of an overall scheme to kind of chip away at Terrell's moral image, showing that he was impetuous and given to impulsive and wanton behavior.
Parker further claimed that Bickford had actually been afraid of Terrell after his adultery arrest because she was scared that he would be angry that their relationship had gotten him into such trouble. Because at that point, it was very public what was going on. And again, there are many, many people petitioning the courts, so everyone knew his business at that point. The prosecution also painted a picture of the events leading up to the discovery of Bickford's body. First, it mentioned the pair being seen together in the days and on the night leading up to the murder. Two, describes a faint shriek coming from Bickford's room early in the morning. Three, the sound of something falling to the floor. Four, a person running, then tumbling down the stairs, then being heard leaving the house. Five, was a groan or scream of fire, and residents in a nearby room seeing smoke come under their door. And then six, Mrs. Lawrence, who was of the family living below those rooms, coming up the stairs to find burning bedclothes piled at the top of the stairs and against the door of the other boarder's room. And then seven, help arriving and the room of Mrs. Bickford being extinguished because it was on fire. And then the realization that an item that had been stumbled over in the rush to put out the fires, there was a fire in the closet, on the bed, and in a clothing trunk, was in fact the body of Mary Bickford. So at first they didn't realize there had been a murder. They just knew there was a fire which they were putting out. And then they realized, like, this person has been gruesomely killed.
Right. There was additional evidence also. There was no fire in the fireplace. So it could not be explained as
an accident.
Of the fire used in the room getting out of control. A man's apparel, which consisted of a vest, drawers, socks, and a cane, were found in the room. The razor that was found near the body didn't belong to anyone who was in the house. And then there was the interchange at the stable that we talked about earlier. Terrell was reported to have told the man that he was, quote, in a scrape about a girl.
And then after that opening on Parker's part, witnesses were called for the prosecution. And there were many called. We won't list all of them, but some of the really germane points that sort of brought in new information or corroborated specific elements of information that are important to the sleepwalking angle. So first, Jabez Pratt, who was the coroner, confirmed statements from the opening and added that he had also found a ring in the room with the inscription AJT to MAB, presumably Albert Terrell to Marianne Bickford. And Pratt had also found keys in the pocket of the vest that was in the room, which unlocked a valise and a trunk, which were believed to have belonged to Terrell.
Another witness was Dr. Joseph Moriarty, and he talked about the wound to Bickford's neck as being from ear to ear and separating the larynx and the blood vessels. He also said that it would be possible for a person to perform this at one stroke on herself. And he stated he never knew a person to commit murder on another person with a razor. So it's kind of a weird witness for the prosecution to call.
It is. And I was looking over the notes of the case that were published in the Boston Daily Times, and I kept rereading that passage thinking, did they really call a witness that said she could have done it to herself? But they really did, for a reason I can't fathom. Although I think their initial plan was just to describe the severity of the wound.
Right.
So he may or may not have surprised them with those additional comments. They also called a Joel Lawrence, who owned the house where Mary was killed, and he confirmed that a cravat that was found in the burning room was one that he had seen Terrell wear previously.
There was also James Fulham, who was the stable keeper. And he said that Terrell had told him that somebody had come into the room and tried to murder him.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
So we're establishing a lot of incongruent comments on Terrell's part.
Right.
Additional witnesses were called primarily just to corroborate what had been said in the opening, like the list of things that happened leading up to the discovery. And several were called just to establish the relationship between the deceased and the accused as being romantic and volatile in nature.
There's also the testimony of Mrs. Mary Head, and she described an odd encounter with Terrell, during which he seemed out of sorts and almost asleep. So there was also the testimony of Mrs. Mary Head, who described an odd encounter with Terrell, during which he seemed out of sorts and almost asleep. And he also made a bizarre sound with his throat. Do you know more about that?
I do. It will come up. Just remember that. The opening argument for the defense had some interesting points, and it was delivered not by Mr. Choate, but by his associate, Mr. Merrill. And he, one of the quotes from his opening is, "It does not follow that because a body has been found exhibiting indications of violent death, that a murder has therefore been committed." His argument was very focused on the beyond reasonable doubt angle of finding guilt. And he suggested that the clothing found in the room could have belonged to another man, or it could have been Terrell's, but because he was known to stay with Bickford quite often, it could have been left there at any time, not necessarily the night of the murder.
He also wanted to dispel the idea that, running meant that he was guilty. So he asked, are not innocent men often afraid of being thought guilty?
Merrill also read a list of cases where men had been found guilty and executed entirely on circumstantial evidence. So again, they're building multiple angles to the case, and one is that no one actually saw him do it.
He also asserted that if Terrell had wanted to kill Bickford, he had ample opportunity in their travels together before this particular night.
There was also a little bit of a character assassination going on against Bickford. She was characterized by Merrill in the opening as something of a beguiling siren, and that she used her wiles to infatuate Terrell, and that's what caused him to leave behind his family and turn to her.
So after all of those layers of defense, Merrill introduced the somnambulism defense, orating at length about the nature of the condition and reading a variety of cases and medical studies to support what he was trying to say.
And according to the Boston Daily Times, Merrill's opening lasted 2 hours and 45 minutes. There was a lunch break in the middle, and according to the reporter, was, quote, full of ability and research throughout. So he was impressive, apparently, in his open.
Right.
And then witnesses for the defense were called, the first of which was Mrs. Nabby Terrell, who was the widow of Leonard Terrell and the mother of the defendant. And she testified that Albert had been, quote, in the habit of getting up in his sleep since he was 4 or 5 years old. And she described several episodes from the time he was tiny until he was a teenager and then was a young man on his own and left. Right? So the time he lived with her, she described multiple episodes where he would go on walkabouts and do things completely asleep.
Albert's brother, Leonard B. Terrell, also gave testimony that Albert was prone to wakeful episodes while he was still asleep, and that during some of them, he quote, clenched hold of me very hard, and it was difficult to force his hands off of me.
Additionally, family and neighbors of the Terrell family were called to testify that they had also seen Albert in somnambulist states, some even asserting that they had interacted with him during these events and found him able to speak and even answer questions, but still seem asleep.
The defense attempted to introduce a complaint mentioned by Mary Bickford that Terrell had at one point struck her across the breast forcefully while he was asleep. But it was ruled out as, quote, coming within the rule of declarations. So they couldn't get a sworn testimony from the deceased to back up this claim.
Right. And most witnesses also were used to establish the idea that Albert was, in fact, really quite fond of Mary and treated her very kindly, that he was genuinely in love with her. And a Dr. E.O. Finney was called. There were several doctors called for the defense. But he testified that the fatal wound could have been suicide or murder. Witness Dr. Walter Channing also testified that he had knowledge of women committing suicide in this manner and had also read about it happening just in his career studies and in, you know, journals and staying on abreast of the information of the time.
Right. Several other doctors were called to corroborate the argument that a person could easily commit a murder while sleepwalking.
And one thing that Choate and his associates repeatedly established was that when Albert was sleepwalking, he would make an odd vocal sound, similar to the one described by Mrs. Mary Head when she was on the stand as a witness for the prosecution. So they kind of artfully linked that back to, you remember the other person that said he seemed really odd and made a weird clicking sound in his throat? That's what he does when he sleepwalks. We've established he has, like, an ability to sleepwalk and do things in his sleep.
So on Friday, March 27th, 1846, the defense made closing arguments. Choate's closing statement was 6 hours long.
Yeah, all day, pretty much.
I feel like that's a filibuster almost.
He was known as an orator, and there are some accounts that talk about how astounding it is that he could go on for such length, but he never seemed to lose the thread or focus of his speeches. So he had a lot to say, and it took him 6 hours to say it.
Yes. His testimony included the following. How far does the testimony lead you? Did any human being see the prisoner strike the blow? No. Did any human being see him in that house after 9 o'clock the previous evening? No. Did any human being see him run from the house? No. Did any human being see him with a drop of blood upon his hands? No. Can anyone say that on that night he was not laboring under a disease to which he was subject from his youth? No. Has he ever made a confession of the deed to friend or thief taker? Not one word.
So, that was part of the 6 hour closing statement, and Choate finished at about 4:25 in the afternoon, and after a brief recess, Mr. Parker made his closing argument, summating his case, pretty much just repeating what had come up throughout the trial, and he wrapped up at 6:50. And Albert Terrell waived his option to address the jury, and the court was adjourned until Saturday, the following day.
On Saturday morning, Judge Dewey addressed the jury at length. On the somnambulism issue, he said, quote, "Medical testimony is very properly admitted in these cases, but it should be weighed carefully. It is dangerous to admit the possession of this disease, lest in the reveries of our brains the possessors might commit deeds which in others would be high crimes."
So after just 2 hours of deliberation, at 10 minutes to 1 o'clock, the jury returned with their verdict, which was not guilty. And the foreman of the jury actually stated, though, that the question, and I quote, "the question of somnambulism had not entered into the consideration of the jury." So even with the sleepwalking defense, it seems like the circumstantial nature of the evidence was actually what hurt the prosecution. However, this case is usually cited as the first use of the sleepwalking defense and is characterized as though that's the reason for the acquittal. But the jury foreman said that wasn't even really a factor for them.
Terrell was also tried for the arson charges that were associated with the night of the murder. Choate defended him again with the same defense and used many of the same witnesses, and he was once again acquitted.
Perhaps emboldened by these two successes, Terrell actually, this is so brazen, requested that Choate refund half of his fees, as the case had, both cases had obviously been won with greater ease than expected. Choate, of course, refused. However, he didn't get off on everything. Terrell was convicted of adultery and ended up serving 3 years for it. And after that, he returned to his wife and children in Weymouth, and he lived out his days working in the family business of shoe manufacturer. He could never hang on to any of his money. They did have another child, but that was sort of his life after the trial got pretty quiet. After his trials and his time,
he went home again.
Mm-hmm. And Choate continued his impressive legal career, and he continued to be involved with politics, which could be a whole other podcast because he really was at the nexus point of a lot of important moments. But what's interesting to think about is that from a modern perspective, would this defense have really held water? And we know people use the sleepwalking defense in modern times. There's a famous case from Canada from the late 80s where a man had driven, I think, 14 miles, killed his in-laws, and woke up while he was driving home and drove himself to the police station. And he was actually acquitted. So we know these still come up. And there are still some, you know, that come up even more modern than that. They don't always succeed, though. And a Michael Kramer Bornman, who is a doctor and a medical director of the cardio sleep services at the University of Minnesota, was interviewed by Focus Magazine. And he said of sleepwalking disorders, "Something in the switch between phases goes wrong, creating an aberrant electrical impulse that triggers an overlap between states. You're not fully in REM, so your muscles are relaxed, not paralyzed, and you're not fully in non-REM, so you can still be dreaming. In this state, some of the brain's processes will be awake while others are offline." Why does that lead to violent behavior, you ask?
Yes, he continues. "As with many things in neuropathology, it's to do with real estate. Brain structures like the hypothalamus that regulate sleep sit next to the midbrain, where early evolved behaviors lie. So when this electrical impulse is sparked, it also wakes up this part of the brain, leaving the moral areas, like the frontal cortex, asleep. That leaves nothing to inhibit your rage reaction while you're sleepwalking.
And that's why people are advised to never wake a sleepwalker, because their reaction may not be delightful or pleasant. It's completely not in any way dampened by their morality, so they could do something without even realizing it.
Right.
But some of Terrell's behaviors, like the fire to conceal evidence and running and hiding, are not consistent with sleepwalking actions as we now understand them. And if he had not tried to include that in his defense, you could make the case, but he used the same defense in his arson trial.
Right, right. So it's feasible from a neurological perspective that a sleepwalker could kill another person while asleep, but that then attempting to conceal evidence while asleep,
unlikely.
That's much less likely.
Yeah. So if he were tried today and used the sleepwalking defense, particularly for the arson element, he would probably not fare so well, since that was part of the concealment of the crime. So that's the first, in the U.S. anyway, sleepwalking defense, and it was successful.
Yes. Have you seen the movie Sleepwalk With Me?
Yes.
It's reminded me of that and how alarmed he is when he hears that people, while sleepwalking, when having sleep disorders,
yeah,
have either inadvertently or sort of acting out a rage impulse killed the person that they were sleeping with.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. I always worry secretly that I will one day magically begin sleepwalking and doing bad things. Just a little weird fear of mine.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
You also have listener mail.
I do. I have two pieces of mail today.
Please, please.
One is a very lovely postcard from our listener, Alicia, and she writes, I recently discovered your podcast and have heard about your interest in postcards. I also collect postcards and thought I would send you a historical postcard from my own college. So it's a photo from Bryn Mawr of the first class, and it includes some interesting and notable people potentially in it. One of them, it says, Emily Green Balch of Class of 89, one of the first two American women to win the Nobel Peace Prize, maybe one of the unidentified members of this group portrait. And it's just a lovely picture. And if you're into historical clothing, which I am, it's kind of a nice reference point. I think I actually have a pattern that's based off of one of these outfits. And I also have an email from our listener, Thomas. And he says, Dear Tracy and Holly, a while back, Sarah and Katie did a couple of podcasts on famous historical pets. I wrote them to tell them a rumor I heard in Colleen McCullough's historical novels set in the Roman Empire, Masters of Rome. She mentioned a mutant horse that Julius Caesar would ride into battle. Rather than hooves, it had toes. It would greatly enhance his image with the superstitious Romans and their enemies. I wrote to ask if either of them knew of this or was it an invention of Ms. McCullough's. I did come across another reference to this horse when I was reading the essays of Michel de Montaigne, so this rumor goes back to at least the 16th century. I, too, have seen this rumor several times, and I do know a couple years ago there was a beautiful exhibit at the Field Museum in Chicago, which is one of my favorite museums in the U.S., about horses, and they do mention vestigial toes and how some horses will actually display what looks almost like a knobby toe above the hoof level. So yeah. I'm guessing it's something to that effect, but I want to do more research and find out for sure, because there are a lot of stories that talk about Caesar's toed horse and how it was considered lucky and he was the only man allowed to ride it. It's kind of interesting stuff. But I know horses can have vestigial toes. Right. They're not unheard of.
We just reblogged really wonderful infographic about some of the most famous horses in history on our Tumblr yesterday.
Is he on there? I haven't looked at it yet.
I know that there is a horse of Caesar's on there. I don't recall seeing the toe part.
So we will do more research. But I love weird animal stuff, so I'm always glad to research that. If you would like to email us about weird animal vestigial bits or anything else, you can do so at historypodcast@discovery.com. We're also on Twitter @MistInHistory, on Facebook @facebook.com/historyclassstuff. We're also at mistinhistory.tumblr.com, and we're on Pinterest. If you would like to learn a little bit more about what we've talked about today, you can go to our website and type in sleepwalking into the search bar, and you will turn up the article How Sleepwalking Works. If you would like to learn about almost anything else your mind can conjure, you can do that at our website as well, which is howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Netflix streams TV shows and movies directly to your home, saving you time, money, and hassle. As a Netflix member, you can instantly watch TV episodes and movies streaming directly to your PC, Mac, or right to your TV with your Xbox 360, PS3, or Nintendo Wii console plus Apple devices, Kindle, and Nook. Get a free 30-day trial membership. Go to www.netflix.com/history and sign up now.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.